You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that was told we were too elite for doing the show in front of our Great Value cereal box collection, it's SIFPOD. Welcome to SIFPOD Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Woo!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's our secret weapon. Well, I guess he used to be our secret weapon. Now I guess he's just our weapon. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy!
And each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. His diamond hands will never sell his James Cameron stock. It's John Paula, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello. Hello there. Woo. Good to be back. And yeah, that's about right. Never bet against Jim Cameron.
Hold the line.
If I've said it once, I've said it 100 times.
Yes, those references are to the movies we'll be doing today, The Creator and Dumb Money. We'll be talking about those two movies together today. We'll be doing a best ever challenge on best ever stock movies where the stock market plays a role in the plot.
Which is less films than you would think, as I was frustrated to find out.
Yeah, there aren't really a ton where the stock market is.
You should have taken my suggestion and expanded it to just financial district movies.
Nah, this makes it fun. Okay. And then, of course, we'll do a buried treasure as well. How's everybody doing? John, how are you doing?
I'm a bit sick, as you can tell from my gravelly voice. But otherwise, I'm doing great. It's a very busy week for me at work. But it's the weekend now. I'm excited for that. And a couple of solid movies I'm interested to chat with today. So I'm good. Yeah. Feeling good.
Yeah, looking forward to these conversations very much. Andrew, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm just peachy, my friend.
Good.
How are you doing?
Peachy works. I like peachy. That's certainly a response I could go with. I'm feeling peachy as well. Well, let's get into it. No reason to dilly or dally or do both together. Let's talk about The Creator.
10 years ago today, the artificial intelligence created to protect us detonated a nuclear warhead in Los Angeles. This is a fight for our very existence.
Sergeant Taylor, we are this close to winning the war. But the AI are developing a super weapon. Retrieve it. Or they win.
Amid a future war between the human race and the forces of artificial intelligence, Joshua, a hardened ex-Special Forces agent grieving the disappearance of his wife, is recruited to hunt down and kill the Creator, the elusive architect of advanced AI who has developed a mysterious weapon with the power to end the war and mankind itself. Gun, gun. The Creator comes to us from Gareth Edwards, who, looking for a hit, right? Like, I mean, it's been off and on for the Gareth Edwards career. Far, a little bit hit and miss. Andrew, are you like mostly miss or mostly hit?
Mostly hit. I love Gareth Edwards.
Okay.
I'm actually very surprised because I wasn't sure. I'm like, what else? What's he been up to? He hasn't done a movie since Rogue One. That was 2016. Years ago.
Yeah. It's been a while.
I thought. Well, did he come out with something like during the pandemic that I totally missed and forgot about? No. He's been taking it easy. Good for him.
John David Washington stars as Joshua. Jimmy Chan as Maya. Are kind of at the center of what's going on. Allison Janney in there doing some good work as well. What did you guys think of The Creator? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or is just okay? John, why don't you start?
I loved it.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Andrew?
It's difficult when you just come out of a movie and then you have to record the show like immediately and try and collect all your thoughts. I think I'm going to land on I loved it.
Okay.
But I just want everybody to know in my headspace, this is all coming at you fresh.
That's tough. That's real tricky.
I'm coming in the room hot. I love this movie. So.
And I honestly don't think there are always discussions, but I don't think we talk enough about how instant reaction culture impacts the ability to really assess how we feel about these stories that we're told. Because our culture is so much about, you know, see the thing, talk about the thing. It really kind of, I find the deeper conversations happen about movies you've seen, you know, a few times or saw once 20 years ago and then rewatched last week. You know what I mean? Like those conversations, because you've had time to live in what you're seeing.
Exactly.
So I'm a little bit mixed on this as well. And I don't know where I will eventually land 10 years from now, but right now I am going to barely be and liked it from It's Just Okay. I was really close to saying It's Just Okay, but I'm going to go with liked it.
Now that's interesting because for those who haven't heard the pre-show, you had mentioned that this movie made you cry at some point. And for me, that's always an emotion reserved for the highest of films.
Yeah, you've never cried at a bad movie?
Right, exactly right. Like if a movie evokes that
Welcome
much emotion
to my
for me,
world. this is my pain.
That's exactly right. If for me, if a movie makes me cry, then it is automatically like a 9 out of 10. It is already done so much more emotional and story driven work that sometimes it's an unearned emotion where it's just invoking something personal out of me that the movie didn't really set up itself.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And there's certainly instances of that, but when it does earn it, it's like, well, that you this movie's already,
I don't know. Bad acting or great, I'm sorry, great acting can make me cry in a bad movie. It just can happen.
That's very interesting to me.
Because I'm buying the humanness of what's going on because of the performance.
Right.
But then when I take a step back and look at the whole thing, then I may have some more issues.
Yeah, for me, if it's a good enough performance to make me cry, then I feel like I'm able to overlook other things.
But it's just like one small part of the movie, though. You know what I mean? Like one scene that's acted well.
I think this is like one of those things where like what we appreciate about film is coming to the forefront. Like I think for me and John, performances really drive how much we appreciate a movie where you are more theme based.
Mm-hmm. And sure, I mean, I'm all of the above, but like if I'm crying, then like the other stuff's already worked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Usually.
Yep. Well, I would love for you to live a day in my emotions and just feel the beauty of it.
Small sidebar there on man and their emotions.
So to move this to another category, because I'm enjoying this conversation. Have you ever laughed at a bad movie?
All the time.
Okay, yes, so for sure. Me, that's like crying is a response, like laughing. It's like something happened that triggered something, and I went with it. Like I'm as apt to cry as I am to laugh. I think both are beautiful things.
I totally appreciate that analogy, and that did help me sort of put it in perspective better. But I will say, if I'm laughing at a bad movie, it's usually ironically, and it doesn't get points.
Well, not always though. Right. I mean, literally,
if I have a genuine laugh from a bad movie. I don't think it's a bad movie because it made me genuinely. Least that's like a meh movie. You know what I mean? It's at least borderline.
Well, and let's remember I said I liked this movie.
You did.
I hated it or anything.
You did. True.
No, Aaron, you're falling into the pit, Aaron.
Worst movie of the year for you.
Year.
Yeah.
Claw yourself out.
All right, guys. I will let you two fight it out for who loved it more. It sounds like maybe John had a more firm, you know, loved it. So why don't you start us off, John? What are some of the things, some of your general thoughts on the movie?
Yeah. Excuse me, that cough is going to come up all night. I think first and foremost, the world building was so expansive.
Dang it, that was going to be my first thing.
It was so captivating. I just wanted to live in this space and learn more about this universe. There's a quick just kind of cutaway to a digital billboard in some Asian city where the advertisement on the billboard is asking humans to donate their facial likeness to be used on robots. And it's like, donate your likeness today. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is such a terrifying and awesome concept for a movie like this. And I wanted to live in this space, the way the robots were designed, the way they interact, the way they're used against this backdrop that is, I would say, like 70 to 80% practical with sort of flourishes of visual effects mixed in. That sort of, that visual cocktail was so just captivating. And I wanted to spend more time in these locations. And I think Gareth Edwards has a really good eye on how to give us something unique. And we haven't really seen this type of setting before. We've seen, you know, space and space stations and spaceships. But this was like, what if we have robot technology, but it's in Vietnam? And it's like, that's so cool. I've never seen that juxtaposition before. And everything around that was just sort of icing on the cake. But that was what really pulled me in from the jump.
Andrew, what about you? Some of your general thoughts?
Yeah, totally going to echo everything you said about the world building. I think Gareth Edwards has a beautiful eye for capturing as much real detail as he can. Kind of like what John was saying. I wish I knew the name of the camera that he used for this movie. Yeah, but it's
Sony AX3, I think it was. It's a consumer camera. It costs like $4,000.
It's a consumer camera.
You can buy it at B&H.
Exactly, yeah. And that allowed him to shoot more of the backgrounds. This was filmed in Thailand, and some of these shots are just like screensaver breathtakingly beautiful. And I think that that's where you see Gareth Edwards shine the most. He is a visual master. You look at all of his movies. You look at Rogue One, Godzilla, Monsters, this. He knows how to visually make a beautiful film. And I think he does here. This may be, I don't know, man. Godzilla is a really beautiful looking movie. Some of those shots.
I'll say as much that this is probably the best looking sci-fi movie in, you know, 5 or 6 years at least. This was really well done. I mean, I'm trying to think of another. All right, excluding Avatar, because that's almost a cheat, right? That almost doesn't count. Excluding, I was thinking of other contemporary movies like this, like Arrival or The Martian or other stuff sort of in that vein that takes place in this near future. Blade Runner 2049 comes to mind as another movie that's visually really beautiful. I loved everything about that. And correction, it's the FX3. The Sony FX3 is the camera, not AX.
You can tell by watching this movie that there are a lot of homages to other films that have come before it. Like, I can see a lot of Akira and Blade Runner in this.
It's hard not to, you know, borrow some of those influences because they're so steeped in this genre that you can't do certain. I'm like, yeah, that's Kubrick. That's 2001. I was like, yeah, well, how do you not do movies with spaceships and not make some of that look like Star Wars? And Gareth had done a Star Wars, obviously, so it's. But yeah, there's a couple sequences where these, I guess they're just airships or helicopters with jets that are quickly flying away from explosion. And I'm like, oh, that looks just like the Death Star run, where these three ships fly past the camera as the explosion happens in the distant background. I'm like, oh, that looks exactly like Star Wars.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me at all.
No, that's not a bad thing.
Use the same notes, write a different song, you know, kind of thing. Like, you know, there's especially when you're dealing with a genre like sci-fi or horror or some of those, you know, like really like well defined genre, you know, material. It's always going to feel a little bit like that. And I don't think there's any way to watch this movie. I shouldn't say that. I think it would be very difficult to watch this movie and come away going, what a ripoff. I mean, this movie feels wholly unique, wholly interesting.
Very much so.
It is.
I really appreciated that after having seen, you know, over 5,000 movies, this movie still showed me a lot of stuff I had never seen before. And again, it's you're playing with the same 20 ingredients, especially in the genre of dystopian sci-fi killer robots. Like, yeah, okay, we've seen all these parts before, all these ingredients. But the way they were mixed together, there were new images and new concepts and new moral quandaries that were introduced that I had never sort of seen before. And I really loved that because it was I remember having the thought like, oh, wow, that's unique. I've never seen that done before.
Cool.
And I always love when a movie kind of is able to deliver that for sure.
Well, since you guys talked about the world building, which was also probably my favorite thing about this movie, and the visuals, which I think are spectacular, I'll talk about the performances. I don't think it's a surprise that I love John David Washington. I think, you know, he's just great in whatever I see him in. I cannot stop hearing his dad. I'm sorry, John. I can, like,
it is,
when he
it's
talks,
right there.
It's
I don't hear it.
Canny. Like
that's wild.
I could close my eyes and think Denzel was starring in The Creator. Like, it's wild to me how much they sound alike.
I had a few moments where I was like, my brain did that little, like, where it forgets where it is for a second. I'm like, Denzel? I was just like, I'm like, oh, right. He's his son. Like, I forgot for a moment who I was watching, because he's so good in this that I thought I was watching Joshua, this, you know, half cybernetic human in the distant future. And I forgot it was, you know, Denzel Washington's 39-year-old son. And then every now and then I'd hear his voice and I'm just like, oh, right.
Madeline Una Voiles, I'm going to say, who Ooh. Plays a young do they call him simulants? What do they call it?
Right?
Something like that.
Sim? Synth?
I think it's Sim something.
I think it was Sim, yeah. Alfie. Alfie was her name in the movie.
Alfie.
Alfie's incredible.
So good.
I kind of want to hang on to this performance for some future where somebody asks me, what's the best child performance of all time? Because I think it's in the conversation.
That's high praise.
She just blew me away. And
it's very good. There's a lot of complex stuff happening where
exactly.
she needs to grapple with life and death and consequence and, you know, if I make this choice, this, and this happens. And, like, with as a dad of kids and girls this age, they don't know how to think five moves ahead like that. They don't know how to contextualize and internalize those types of emotions visually on their face. It's like, act sad. My daughter can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Act distraught because you're making an impossible Sophie's choice. Like, she's not going to know how to take that direction. But yeah, this girl was.
Well, show her the Sophie's choice, John. Gosh.
Yeah. All right, sweetie, you ready to watch Meryl Streep tonight?
Meryl Streep is.
Yeah, she was real good.
Yeah, so those two are the primary ones that stuck out to me. Ken Watanabe is always great as well. I thought he was phenomenal in this. Gemma Chan is certainly great. I didn't think she had as much to do. And that's just, you know, part of what we're dealing with.
Who really transformed for me? Alison Janney.
Like, I've seen her do this kind of thing before. Like, she's
I haven't.
Yeah, as far as like stretching to, like, she is a really good character actor. Like, she has played a lot of different kind of roles.
I don't think anybody doubted her ability. And if I'm being honest, I've seen her be better. It's not her, it's the writing. She didn't have that character, was not afforded any, I guess, showy scenes where she gets, there's one moment in the beginning where we get a little bit of that like human context from her, which she nails, it's great. But from then on out, she's just sort of a nameless sort of background element that's kind of tangential to the plot. I was never really satisfied with how her entire character was like just superfluous. It happened alongside and then they meet up sort of towards the end of the movie. And it's like, yeah, I guess she was kind of important to the plot. I don't know. I feel like that was maybe my one weak spot actually was her character.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. I thought I was going to come into this and be like, all right, guys, yeah, we're all going to talk about Alice Janney being amazing.
No, I mean, she's good, but I don't think the character was written particularly.
Alice Janney is supremely talented. I wouldn't put this in her top five performances.
Ooh. No.
Yeah, so...
Shout out to Sturgill Simpson, the Americana folk rock singer, country singer,
yeah.
who played the character Drew, Josh's friend, in the middle act of the movie. And I didn't recognize him at first. I'm like, this guy looks familiar. Sturgill Simpson, great, great singer. And apparently he's an actor now. This is the first time I've seen him in a movie, so good for him.
Let's see, other thoughts? Do you guys have anything else you want to – you both love this movie, so like go on. You know, go on with yourself. What else did you love?
I think a lot of what we said is just really encompassing. Like when you say the visuals are spectacular, you want to shout out specific moments and stuff like that. But it's one of those movies. Like I just want people to experience this movie for themselves and just come away and not really know too much going in.
I loved the way that the invented technology was integrated into the story in meaningful ways. There's a brain chip that they introduce for one character, and it's it serves its purpose from an expositional standpoint. But then that also kind of plays in later in the movie, and they've already set it up what it's capable of, why it's important. Mm-hmm. So I love the way they use technology. Just the design of the vehicles and weapons and stuff like that was really cool. And I think this movie engaged with the AI conversation in a way that felt maybe not like super unique and fresh, but it was, I think, had enough reverence and enough respect for the totality of that entire, I don't know, conversation of artificial. Is it going to wipe us out? Is it going to bring us to, you know, another higher evolution? And I think it did some cool things with that sort of thought process, that robots and AI can help us. They can be subservient and they can better humanity. And it's also potentially our downfall if we abuse it. And it had some interesting stuff to say there, which I liked. And then final thought, which I definitely want to point out because this still blows my mind. This movie was produced for $80 million. And then you look at a movie like Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. You look at a movie like Indiana Jones or The Flash that was produced for like $300 million. And it's like, where did the money go? Because this movie, for my money, pardon the pun, looked so much better and more expansive and more developed than either of those other two. And they cost three, four times as much. Which is crazy to me.
Besides the stuff they can't fake, like the head modules and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of it's just on location filming.
I think this movie is a standard bearer for the industry because they are going to have to make sub $100 million movies. That's just, if they're going to be profitable businesses, their foray into the movies that cost hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars is going to have to shrink greatly. And
it's absolutely unsustainable. All the big flops this summer were just, it wasn't because the movies didn't perform well. It's because they cost $400 million to make. And unless you're Jim Cameron, that's not a formula for success. It just doesn't work.
Right. So I do think it is a standard bearer, or could be a standard bearer in that way of something for Hollywood to look at and go, this is kind of what we got to do, because it feels big. It feels like a blockbuster. It's sci-fi. It's cool. It's got effects in it. And we kept the price down. And that's just kind of, I think, going to have to be this new industry, this new world as we move. Although, you know, as this movie hints at, AI may be a part of keeping that cost down in the future.
Not to get way off tangent, but the WGA writer strike that ended this week, they made a lot of provisions that mostly protect against AI, and which I was very glad to see, because they got out in front of that. They're like, nope, we're not going to go down that road. If we choose to, as writers, individually, personally, to use AI to help our writing, we're allowed to do that, but you're not allowed to just generate content without us and just put it in here and pretend it's us or so I love that they outlined a lot of forward-thinking issues there.
I read an article that said that the wording of the deal puts a lot of trust in the studios to do the right thing, and that there aren't really any true ways to hold them accountable for, you know, some of the things that they
Are you saying you don't trust Walt Disney Corporation? you don't trust Comcast, the Universal? You don't trust them to manage
all
their
I'm
media?
Saying is 10 to 15 years from now there will be a movie release that is completely AI and no human being was involved in the voice or the acting. It's gonna happen in the next decade or so. Hollywood can do that, that contract's, you know, of course that contract will be up by then, but anyways.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's some of the positive stuff. I guess I can dive into the things that give me pause with this movie. There's a lot in this movie I didn't like. I should say that didn't work for me. As great as the world building is, a lot of it is nonsensical. A lot of the leaps in logic that this world makes about weaponry and where things are heading and how things would be happening in an AI versus human war are just kind of silly and don't make a lot of sense. Now,
I need you to give me some examples.
I'll give you one.
Yeah.
But I don't want to spoil like everything in the movie, but I'll go ahead and give you one. A robot that runs to a building and blows itself up. Makes no sense in a world where you can target anything with a missile and send a missile. It is the least efficient way to blow anything up in the history of blowing things up. It makes no sense on any kind of logical level that that would be some kind of ammunition that the government would invest in or, you know, put out there.
Yes, but it looks cool.
So you're complaining that the government is not spending its money logically.
No, I'm complaining.
I want to make sure I hear that correctly.
No. I'm complaining in a world building that shows such amazing technology that the humans are creating against the AI that they would use something like this when they had something else. I don't know if it's much of a spoiler to talk about the main weapon in this movie, but that main weapon completely negates so much of what happens in this movie.
I did have the thought, like a CinemaSins thought, like 20 minutes in, like, wait, why do they have to go to the base and like
they don't.
Laser target
they
it?
Don't.
If they can just get it from the they sky at any point.
Don't.
Because that's what they end up doing, is just blowing it up from the sky. So, like, if you know where it is,
this is
and
what
you
I'm
don't
saying.
Need to blow.
There's enough of this movie falls into that that it just becomes distracting. Now I can put that stuff aside, you know, and enjoy the visuals and have a good time. And I did. I liked this movie, but there was enough of it that you know that didn't work for me. That it was just kind of a pause. I have no idea what this movie is saying about AI and humanity. I don't think it has a cohesive point of view, which I find really annoying for a movie that feels like it wants to be so emotional, and has such great performances again that made me cry. You know, there is a lack of in my mind, and I could be, you know, clued into something that I possibly missed. I'm not even sure this movie understands the actual conundrum that underlies AI versus humanity. I'm not sure this movie even ever breathes at, winks at, hints at the actual understanding that the problem with AI versus humanity is humanity doesn't have a chance. Like the actual problem is that AI is way too advanced for us to even, like for there even to be a war. Like it's just the way that this movie handles that is it's kind of befuddling to me because I'm like, I think it wants to exist in this, you know, AI versus human conundrum that we've seen since, you know, Terminator and before. But it just not only doesn't have anything new to say, I'm not sure it has anything at all to say. So that, you know, so I come away from it just kind of feeling a little empty in that regard. And like you said, Andrew, that is kind of where my bread's buttered, right? Like that is where, like when I'm watching a movie, if I'm going, okay, if we're looking at, you know, themes, message, story versus performances versus, you know, visual effects. You know, themes, message, story is going to be, you know, the top of what gets me list. And so I think it says a lot for this movie that I feel that way and still like the movie. Like, because it is a fun watch. I want to watch this movie again. Some of the gadgets are so cool. I think they're kind of silly, but they're so cool. And like, I think that's saying something about this movie. You know, that it's good enough that even as little as I bought in to the mechanics of this world, or the logic of this world, I should say, that I was so enamored by the detail of this world and the things I hadn't seen before, you know, little gadgets I hadn't seen before or whatever, that I still liked it. So that's kind of where that's my cognitive dissonance is, you know, watching it was a little bit of what? Oh, but that's awesome. But what? You know, like that was kind of my experience throughout. But I still had a good time.
Well articulated. Yeah. And I'm inclined to agree with a couple of the things you said.
I'm not.
I guess they didn't bother me as much.
Sure,
some of those logic issues, I didn't really care. The logic stuff didn't really bother me. The AI stuff, I think they dealt more with AI as personhood and less about like humanity versus AI, which would have been an interesting tack to take as well. But I like.
But what
the stuff
did he even have to say about AI as personhood?
Maybe I was bringing my own, projections into the script because, yeah, I don't know that the movie.
But can I tell you something?
No. I think that it. Oh, go ahead.
No. Go ahead because I think you have a direct response. I was going to kind of shift a little bit, so go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that I think that the evolution of human is the tagline, or humanity evolved. I think that it should have been something to the effect of humanity's consciousness evolves or something like that. Because I don't think that the movie's saying that humanity is the one that needs to change in the sense of like physically change or anything. I was like, look at these. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to word this without talking around spoilers.
Yeah,
and stuff
no,
like
it's
that.
Hard sometimes. Yeah.
But I think that the movie's saying that humanity needs to look at artificial intelligence as a true living, you know, species.
Yeah, yeah, that's
we are
that's
beyond.
Yeah, coexisting.
Where though? Exactly. Where is this movie saying that? Like, that's like the only thing we have that points that direction, in my opinion, is the progress of our protagonist. But I don't know what, like, other than it's a cute one. Like what is the, you know, the actual. What does he actually learn that, you know, makes him see AI in a different way?
I definitely can't talk about that without getting into spoilers.
But that's,
I definitely can't.
But that's not. But again, that the movie doesn't. I don't think the movie actually takes the time to explore what you're talking about with what happens towards the end in a way that would help us understand how he is now processing the change. I don't know why our protagonist changes.
Aaron, I know you don't play video games, but there's one that came out a couple years ago that you might like called Detroit Become Human.
I've played it a little bit.
Oh, okay.
I love it.
That game gets into a lot of the same philosophical questioning that I think is going on in this movie too. It's blanketed under a different light. You know, that was more of a philosophical introspective look into AI, whereas this, I think, is more action-packed as opposed to subtle.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, what I was going to say is, there's also not necessarily anything wrong with a movie saying, bring your own stuff, make your own conclusions, we're not here to preach to you. Like, a movie doesn't have to be like, one of my favorite movies of all time is that way. The Matrix is this way. The Matrix doesn't tell you what to think or how to feel or, you know, like it puts a bunch of stuff on the screen and you're supposed to connect the dots. You know, you're supposed to kind of bring your own. That's why The Matrix is one of those movies that almost anybody, you will hear different people talk about in a way that's so meaningful to them. Like, oh, as a Christian, this was so meaningful to me when this happened because it's representative of this. And you can tell that they wanted this to be a Jesus, you know, figure. And then somebody else will be like, oh, no, this is, you know, my Hindu faith is matched like right here. And you can see that, you know, it kind of puts all of it out there in a way to go place yourself in here and feel the things you need to feel and think the things you want to think. This movie, unfortunately, unlike The Matrix, for me, didn't put me in any place where, like, afterward I was like, oh man, what would have I done in that situation? Or, oh, I never thought of AI in that way. Like, there wasn't anything for me to continue processing after the movie other than that was a cool shot. Oh, I love that little gadget that did this thing. Oh, that was a funny line. By the way, this movie's funny. We didn't talk about that. That's another reason I like the movie. This movie has a good sense of humor. We should, you know, mention that. There's some really funny lines.
Yeah, there were a few times I laughed out loud. And I'm reminded of a movie that did AI much better in the last year. It was one of your buried treasures, Aaron, from a few months back. I can't remember the name of it, but it involved a little girl and
oh, yeah, the Artifice Girl.
That was
yeah.
Artifice Girl, that was tremendous in terms of the theming and the concepts
right.
and the thesis of AI as personhood and, like, is it good or bad? Is the moral quandaries do not really get broached in The Creator. So I think after your long monologue there, I will downgrade to low side of loved it.
No, I'm not trying to bring anybody down. I'm just telling
you the reason I'm
not over the moon for the movie.
You've highlighted something that we talked about it earlier, right? We all just saw this in the last 24 hours. The movie's not even a day old yet.
Yeah.
So I'm still sort of processing my own. And immediately I was like, that looked cool. I loved it. 9 out of 10. But when you actually talk about it and you dissect it, it's like, actually, some of this doesn't quite hold up to scrutiny. Some of these things that were more porous, I was able to kind of gloss over. But when you actually look at it, you know, more like a 10,000 foot view, it's like, yeah, all right, maybe it wasn't as strong as I thought. And I'm
just
sort of filling in the holes myself.
I, you know, a movie doesn't owe me anything story-wise. They can be what it wants to be. The problem is if I'm only invested in, like, the world building and the visuals and the performances, then those little nitpicky things take more weight, right? Because they're stealing from the world for me. Like, you're adding to the world and then you're stealing from the world because I don't have those other things to think about and talk about afterwards. Like I do with The Artifice Girl or other movies like that, where I'm thinking about them for days and just thinking, oh man, how, you know, what an interesting thought that an AI would do this and how would I respond? And but again, to restate, I like this movie and I recommend it. I think it's one worth watching. And I think the world it presents is really, really interesting. Any other thoughts from you guys?
My last thought, besides no post-credit scene, is I love the fact that this movie shows our character Joshua becoming more human as the movie progresses because of his interaction with artificial intelligence. It's as if the artificial intelligence is helping him become a better person.
Yeah, I think that was the thesis. I think I wish they could have explored a little deeper into some of those themes, but that was
That would have been great. That's really
for me. That was the strongest sort of emotional through line. Was
well, you look
sort
at the very beginning of the movie, and he's a soldier. He's very analytical and he's very cold. And you watch his progression throughout the movie. He is a full fledged human by the end of it.
I don't know if I agree about the also beginning. Credit to I think he's shown pretty warm and open and. You know, pretty broken up.
But then he can turn it off.
I think what happens at the beginning of the movie brings him to the cold and, you know.
Also, full disclaimer, I missed the beginning of this movie.
Oh.
My Regal Cinemas, which usually will air 20 to 25 minutes of previews, probably only aired 5 or 10 minutes because I got into the theater and he was unplugging a robot against its wishes. And I'm like, I think I only missed 30 or 40 seconds. And I
think I missed some exposition.
Yeah.
I missed some stuff. Conversation, John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously,
you missed.
I got to go back and check out the rest. Because I'm thinking, well, they've never started a movie this early, so it must only be a minute or two. Maybe the credits.
Yeah.
See, this is a reason why the No Frames Pledge should be expunged from the world because it causes people to be late for movies and they miss vital important stuff.
I think you're right.
I think I picked everything up, but I halfway through the movie, I'm like, they keep talking about this night, and I'm like, I think that might have been the beginning of the movie.
I think I might have missed that.
Ah, gosh darn it. They keep referencing this one thing, and I'm like, I think that might have been the prologue.
This is why I take headphones and just put my head down during the trailers.
I had to put the girls to bed. I was running late.
Oh, you're just running late.
Theater's on the other side of town. And I thought, well, I got time. They've never started a movie before. 25 minutes passed. Tonight they did.
Nice. All right. I think that wraps it up for the creator. But I think it's a recommend from all of us.
Absolutely.
Really cool stuff going on in this movie that I think you will enjoy.
I think there's something everyone will take away from this that they like.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Let's move on to our second movie. Let's talk a little bit about Dumb Money.
Yo, what up, everybody? Roy and Kitty here. I'm going to pick a stock and talk about why I think it's interesting. And that stock is GameStop.
I love this guy.
Retail traders have hooked into GameStop.
I think they think it's a good investment.
It looks like there's one guy driving all the buying.
Who is this schmuck?
Dumb money, man.
Happy to take it.
Internet commenter Keith Gill sinks his life savings into GameStop stock and posts about it. When his social posts start blowing up, so do his life and the lives of everyone following him. As a stock tip becomes a movement, everyone gets rich until the billionaires fight back and both sides find their world turned upside down. Dumb Money is Paul Dano as Keith Gill. And then I'm just going to say some names. Shailene Woodley, Seth Rogen, Pete Davidson, Talia Ryder, Sebastian Stan, American Ferreira, Dane DeHaan, Nick Offerman, Anthony Ramos, Vincent D'Onofrio, Clancy Brown. This is an insane amount of people showing up for a cup of coffee in this movie. What did you guys think about Dumb Money? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew.
Okay.
Just okay from Andrew.
Just okay.
John.
Right there. Just okay.
Just okay from John as well. I'm going to go... I was going to go just okay, but you guy, I don't want it just to be like just this mediocre, like just like this thing.
Do it. Like, we all just you go, should be true to yourself.
Join us.
And then we just move on to the next thing.
That's all right.
No, I am going to go with just okay. Maybe I'll go with high side of just okay. I think there's enough here to like to push it up a little bit. So I guess I'll start since I said high side of just okay.
Number one movie of the year, Aaron. Go ahead.
That's right. Dumb Money's the movie of the year, and The Creator's the worst movie ever made. Yep, you got me.
Yep.
I think for me, the reason that I come away from this at least glad I watched it was the efficiency with which it really covers a lot of different angles of this story. Now, this is a story that happened 2 years ago. So, like, this is, you know, this, and if you weren't tuned into it, that's fine. But, you know, for most of us, it's like, I just went through this.
That's one of my biggest negatives, actually, is that this is so, I watched that saga unfold in real time on both the news and on Reddit. And seeing this again, dramatized by a whole ensemble of really talented people, was like fun, and like the dramatizations of these scenes was interesting and funny. But it's like this also didn't offer anything new or fresh that I didn't know before, and that I think is my biggest negative. Is like I feel like I just watched this in real time, in real life.
It's fun though, is what I'm trying to say. Like it's fun to watch this movie. This movie has a good time. It's quick and yet understandable. It's, you know, a lot of, I found some of the most affecting stuff, actually, the montages of like the real life TikToks and that kind of,
I thought
that stuff was put together so well. Like it was like
a documentary.
Well, it felt to me like an EDM song where the beat's building up and then you're just waiting for it to drop, waiting for him to drop the beat. And just like this, like, it gave this feeling of what it must have felt like for these people at times to be like, wait, am I really not selling this stock when it's worth $500,000? You know, like, how am I not doing this? So, like, I do think the movie did a good job at portraying the various different emotions and angles and things of people who were involved in what happened here. So that's probably my biggest positive, is just how fun it is. I thought this was a fun watch.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
It's a no-nonsense film. It just gets right into it. It doesn't want to beat around the bush with anything.
It's pleasantly short. It's only 105 minutes, and 10 of those are credits. So it's like a good hour and a half movie. And I miss those. We need more 90-minute movies. We really do.
We need movies to be the length they're supposed to be. I don't care if they're 90 or if they're 180. Like, just if you're making a good movie, make a good movie.
I agree with that sentiment, but lately a lot of the long movies don't need to be that long. And I think that's
also the big movement in my friend group right now is just bring back the intermission, please. Just bring back the intermission.
I'm okay with
it. I gotta go to the bathroom, man. Like, you know, I'm pushing 50. Let's go.
Andrew, what else were you going to say that you either liked or didn't like about it?
Performances. I think that Paul Dano has... I've never seen him like leading man that I can think of.
Is he even leading man here? He has a slight majority of the screen time, and I guess he's the protagonist because he's the center of the story. But I felt like this plot was so evenly split amongst five or six different groups that I hesitate to call any of them like the protagonist. It's sort of just a group, and like they all go through the same character arc, kind of.
Not to get into negatives right now, but that actually is a perfect segue into my biggest negative for this film, and that it's there are too many characters to keep track of. The film really wants to show how all these different people of different walks of life have been affected by this stalk, but with so many people to take care of, to care for in this film, it doesn't give each character enough time to properly be fleshed out.
I think Paul Dano probably has 25 minutes of screen time total in this 105-minute movie. Like, I would have to count it, but it felt like less than a half an hour. We were actually with him, like a third of the runtime.
I'd take the over on that.
I feel like we're with other people for more than 50% of this film, at least.
Jonathan, what about any of your general thoughts?
I really liked the way it was presented. A lot of those interstitial montages were really fun. The way they framed every introduction with a net worth negative $18,000. And then at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. we follow up. I loved all that frame. It felt a bit like a documentary about this, but it's sort of a glorified dramatization. But the one thing I didn't really appreciate, but I didn't mind because I did know about the real life situation, is how often this movie just foregoes actual explanation or exposition about what's happening or why and goes for a joke instead. And a few times I'm kind of like, I mean, I remember all about the short sale and I remember what that squeeze meant and how it worked from my financial perspective. But I also remember having a good deal of trouble learning that a couple years ago. So if you went into this movie blind, not knowing about the GameStop thing in 2021, this movie doesn't really explain it to you. And it does jokes and it does more stuff with Pete Davidson than it bothers to like explain some of the nuance. And I guess you don't need to know that. You're more invested in like, will these people make it rich? Will these people go poor? But that was a note I'm like, oh, I kind of wish they got deeper into the weeds on some of that.
If you want that, you should watch The Big Short.
Right.
Because that's the movie that explains everything about Short. I think The Big Short
did that really well, for sure. And then last point I want to make was I was really glad that this movie portrayed the Reddit army and all the Diamond Hands in such a positive light. And they could have gone another way with it. They could have been like, who cares about all these basement dwellers who wasted all their money on this stupid joke stock? They're a joke. They're poor. They're, you know, retail stock traders. They don't matter. I loved that. And, you know, predictably, I don't think you'd have a very successful movie if the billionaires were the good guys. But I do appreciate that. For the most part, the Redditors come out looking okay here. And I did like that because I'm on their side.
I thought you were talking about the Wall Street Bets chat and like how, you know, perverse and vulgar it is. And
no, not quite those guys, but like the general community that was very like anti-billionaire, anti, you know, Wall Street.
Oh, sure.
I'm glad that they were painted.
I totally agree with. I thought you were talking about like seeing the good character and I thought you were being smart alecky
about the characters we follow, not the ones that are like doxing people and doing vulgar things online. It's hard to separate
that though.
It is difficult
to separate. This is the Snyder bro Redditor.
Right. You're articulating my point better than I could, which was I think so much of Reddit culture during this time 2 years ago got wrapped up in, oh, they're just a bunch of, you know, vulgar man child and we don't need to listen to them. I'm glad that this movie sort of gave them personalities and personified them in a way that was favorable, and it wasn't, oh yeah, they're all just nerds and losers
and
vulgar.
I do have cognitive dissonance with the fact that it does portray favorably some of the bad behavior as well. So like there is, you know, like, and I don't mean specifically, I just mean in general, like when you just kind of do a blanket, like these are the good guys, you know, that this movie does, it does ignore a little bit of the nuance. Listen, movies don't have time to get into all of the nuance. I get it. But you know, there is a problem with internet culture. There is a real, for the most part, bro culture problem with the dark recesses of the internet, and a very dangerous one at times. And part of this movement involved some of those kind of people just wanting to be anarchistic or, you know, whatever the case may be. But, you know, the movie didn't deal with it. That's okay. That doesn't actually bother me too much. I don't feel like that's the point this movie had to make.
Yeah.
Although it does play into my largest negative with the movie, which maybe I'll just go there. Maybe I'll just take us to the negative, guys. This movie wants to pretend it's David versus Goliath, but it comes to the battle with a completely empty slingshot. There is nothing. This movie wants to portray that the little guy took down the big guy. A, that's not what happened. It just didn't happen that way. And B, even the movie itself has a hard time making it look at the end like anybody got anything that was any kind of consequence. You know, so
yeah,
like,
the ending was not only abrupt, it was frustrating, especially mm-hmm. since we already went through it and this is 2 years later and there's still we're still not better off. This didn't, you know, irrevocably change.
Did you check GameStop's stock price?
I haven't.
It's where it was when all this started.
It's back at $20. Yeah.
No, it's back at $5 or $6 or whatever. Like it's ridiculous how low it is. So it's like you can say the little guy got rich, but you're kind of wrong because it's zero sum. So some little guys got rich. Yeah, the movie doesn't have to deal with all of this nuance. But to create such a David and Goliath versus story and then to build to something like this in a situation where David actually didn't kill Goliath, didn't actually even come close.
It's frustrating.
It's frustrating. It's very frustrating.
And also, it's not a movie. We have to live in that frustrating world where
right, yes.
We will never do better. The system will always bail out them and never help us. And I think, to Andrew's point earlier, had the movie focused more on Paul Dano and actually shown his happy ending – and we connect it, but we don't actually get to really see his ending. It's like, we don't know how much any end with, because he, you know,
well, they show his off end, the they, internet. They show his end net worth,
presumed. We don't actually know how much he's worth or when he sold. He kept right. that a secret. We don't actually know. The movie's like, he could be worth $30 million. He might have held until it was worth $30,000.
Well, worth $30 million for selling the rights to his story to this movie. Like,
that would have, if that was part of the movie, that would have genuinely, I would have loved that ending. If it followed him all the way up to this very movie being made, I would have been like, yes, that's real. I wanted to follow his path and his family and see more of him and Shailene Woodley and see him buy a new house or whatever at the end. Like, show me something. He's my proxy, right? He's a middle-income, middle-aged male in New England like me. Like, I want to live vicariously through his massive financial success. And we don't really get to see that. And that was frustrating.
Yeah.
That we just get a title card that's just like, yep, he might be worth $30 million and bye. That was frustrating.
Andrew, talk at us a little bit. What are you thinking? How are you feeling?
I'm talking at you now.
Thank you.
No. Let's talk about, let's see, why I think this movie is just anticlimactic.
Yeah, that's
exactly right. And I think I think it has to deal, for me at least, with the fact that this story isn't entertaining. I mean, it was a wild thing that happened, don't get me wrong, but it's not entertainment. This isn't Social Network, where it's just a crazy story and that, you know, everybody needs to hear.
And that movie had, like, human drama, friends against friends. This was just, like, faceless people over the internet and CNBC interviews. Like, it was missing that, I think, human element, especially for our protagonist, which we don't, I think, get to spend enough time with.
Spoiler alert, the villains in this movie never once meet or talk to Paul Dano.
Yeah, like, it's frustrating.
Yeah, like, if you're really the bad guys of the movies, you have to have some conflict of connection with each other. If you've never been in the same room, how is that going to be at all intense?
Now, would this movie have worked better if they just eschewed the real life and just made a fake version of this, right? They just ripped from the headlines. Let's make our own fake scenario, fake companies, fake timeline, and make it more of a holistic beginning, middle, end.
I was going to say that's what Social Network did. I mean, it made up a whole bunch of stuff about, you know, Zuckerberg and everything like that.
Yeah, if this movie just made up a fake thing that happened that was like this, inspired by this, but had actual moments where, you know, the billionaire is a mustache twirling guy that, you know, kicks Paul Dano's dog at the beginning of the movie. I'll never let you live in this house. I'm going to sell the whole neighborhood, kiddo. And then he, you know, rises up and makes all this money and kicks the billionaire out of his house. Something that'd absurd would never happen in real life, but as a movie, maybe that would have been better. I don't know.
The movie really does depend heavily on our Schadenfreude of the Seth Rogen character. It's putting all its eggs in that basket.
Slight spoilers, but like, I was not satisfied with his comeuppance. It was like, I guess he lost a little bit of net worth. Like, he didn't sell any yachts. I'm not crying over. He's not crying over it. Why should I, you know?
Yeah.
And honestly, it's not like he's that evil of a guy. I mean, yeah, he's like corrupt and everything like that, but
corrupt. He's just a guy that had the means and the convenience to make better decisions. If we were in his position, we would have all done the same thing. I don't even necessarily feel like they were bad people. They was just like, all right, yeah, this is a stock that could make me money. I'm going to make it.
Well, Aaron's a better person than you and I, John, so.
No, I was genuinely trying to put myself in those shoes of.
Did they do anything that was like inherently evil? I mean, they bet against the stock. They weren't like explicitly singling out Paul Dano and saying, I want you to go bankrupt and lose your house.
The explicitly bad guy stuff that they're doing is the looking down on the little person. That's generally what we're getting is an attitude of those morons. Yep. Right. I guess I'll just keep taking their money if they keep wanting to put it in.
Dumb money.
Yeah, dumb money.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fair, honestly. I understand that human emotion. It's not unrelatable. I don't think they were evil. They're greedy. I mean, that's about it. And it's like, okay. Yeah, they're greedy and they lost a little bit of money. I don't think they learned their lesson. I don't think they're better people. I don't think anything good came of this.
What is the lesson?
I guess the other thing the movie wants you to...
I don't know if there is one.
The other thing the movie wants you to invest in through very specific the ways that it finishes is it wants you to believe and Wall Street could never look down on the little guy again. Like they would never doubt the dumb money again. Please.
I never once got that notion. Never once.
That the movie literally has a line at the end that says that. No, and Wall Street could never look down on dumb money again. Like literally written on the screen in text.
It's the thesis statement. And I rolled my eyes. And I was like, oh, they've already done it. In the last 2 years, they've already kind of
now
shored
they
up.
Have to check Reddit when they make big deals. And it's like, okay, yeah, sure. They see us as fellow investors now. I'm sure they do. Now one thing we haven't talked about is the whole Robin Hood of it all, the whole Winter Soldier of it all. That was to me that might have been the most interesting thing in the movie. Just because it was kind of like, to me, okay, I get interested
but it's so quick and gone.
It is so quick and gone. But I get interested in the Fire Festival kind of stuff, where it's like, we're just going to say it, and therefore it's true. We don't have to do any planning or any thinking. You know, we just
love those types of characters because their hubris just absolutely outpaces their intelligence. And it's entertaining like a train wreck. It's like, this guy has no, you know, cognitive thought here that's going to make him succeed, but he's just so overly confident, unearned confidence.
Right.
That I'm like, I can't wait to watch him catch fire. He's another guy that, like, at the end of it, he's still worth $1 billion.
Do you remember what they said about those guys? Because there's two of them. They were like,
they're no longer billionaires.
Oh, thank you. I guess they're poverty stricken now that they don't have $1 billion.
Oh, no. Only 790. Oh, no. Poor them.
This movie really, I really do think this movie is an empty movie. It's a very, there's not a lot here. It's just
I'm
going to
forget
watch.
About it next week.
It's just, I think it's fun to watch because for me, I'm a sucker for a true story for one. So I'm always interested in seeing, you know, kind of what that looks like. But there's not a lot to what this movie wants you to think. It's just,
I would definitely recommend it, but I don't think you're going to remember it or have any deeper feelings with it besides just mild frustration. And I think the best way to put it is just like, this is just the smaller and less ambitious little brother to The Big Short, which is the same idea done so much better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're in the mood for that, if you're in the mood for a good stock market driven story, The Big Short would be my recommendation.
I think this movie is more fun than The Big Short, though. Like, I think this is a breezy, fun watch. Like, I laughed a lot at this movie. And it's bold. Like, it's also, like, you know, R with a capital R, too. Like, it's, you know, like, especially with, like, the needle drop choices and, you know, a lot of the gangs. There's a gangster vibe to kind of what they're, you know, portraying here. I think it's... I don't know. It's got an energy to it that I don't see in a lot of, you know, documentaries based on a true story, that kind of thing, which I think is part of the energy and the fun of it. I'd say you could have a good time watching this movie. I just don't think there's a lot there. There you go.
Alrighty then.
Anything else about the dumb money before we continue on?
No post-credit scene.
That is true. All right, let's move on to the best ever challenge. But before we do, thank you to our amazing SIF Pop members. You keep us going. We really do appreciate you. We'd love to do the extra content for you. We record extra fun stuff. I think John mentioned earlier in this show that we talked a little about movies that make us cry, as well as some other things during during our show, before the show, that is available to levels of our members. So go check that out at Patreon. Patreon.com/SifPop. Support starts at $3 a month. And you can check out everything there. And thank you to those who have checked that out and to those who support. We appreciate you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we're going to do stock movies, movies that where the plot is influenced by the stock market. We'll go number five to number one. If you have it higher than somebody else who mentions it,
Trump!
It will get trumped, and the person who has it highest will get the chance to talk about it first. All right, I'll kick us off at number five. I went with Limitless. At number five, I really enjoy this movie. This is Bradley Cooper. I find it's a little bit sci-fi. Limitless is a little bit sci-fi with the, you know, the drug that makes you think good.
It's a great movie, and the TV show spinoff was also pretty solid.
It is pretty solid. It is pretty
because they brought Bradley into the TV show as like a, you know, sort of a tertiary character. And I appreciated that. Total sidebar, but
that guy was also really fun on the Nun show that came out this year. I forget what that was. J.J. Abrams, and that show was really fun too. Anyways, Limitless is a good movie. And it, you know, a lot of it does deal with playing the stock market and how that impacts.
It's a good. We talk about it a lot on the show. A good competency porn story.
Yeah.
Because Bradley Cooper is just a smart guy. Well, he becomes smart, and then he just figures stuff out. I'm like, yes, you absolutely knock those dominoes down. Figure this out. Very fun story. Yep. That's my honorable mentions.
Yep, that's my number five. Andrew, what's your number five?
This is the only one that's kind of going to be, I might get, you know, nicked.
Stretched it a little bit. Stretched for this one, did you, Andrew?
Going with a Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, I thought of that and excluded it.
That's in my honorable mentions as well. And I just rewatched this like 2 weeks ago, and it is so good. Absolutely love this screenplay. It's not really about the stock. It's about selling.
The stock market doesn't really play into it too much.
They're selling shares of real estate.
Yeah, they're making sales.
So. Do you have another number five?
I don't. Right, well,
you forfeit your turn. You yield your time.
There's a lot of just Wall Street movies I haven't seen. The other four on my list are solid, though.
Right. Yeah. So. Glengarry is a great watch with some great performances, for sure. Yeah. Very well written as well.
So. You don't like it on my list? Well, tell me, what are you going to do about it? Huh?
John, what do you got at number five?
Trading Places.
Nice.
Oh, nobody? Yeah. Okay. I thought somebody else would have this. Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd, classic 80s comedy where I forget the premise of this. And I actually rewatched this one recently, too. But there's Eddie Murphy's like a homeless bum or a crack addict or something. And Dan Aykroyd is a hoity-toity, you know, cigar-smoking, club-owning, you know, millionaire son or whatever. And they literally switch places. Yeah, he's like a playboy. And they literally switch places and lifestyles because of a bet. I forget what the setup is. And Eddie Murphy, he has a street-smart kind of a guy. Fast talking, wisecracking dude makes more money on the stock market than Dan Aykroyd did, and I don't know, it's a lot of fun. It's a good Eddie Murphy vehicle from the '80s, as most of them are. That's back when he was really consistent and really funny. And again, the amount of movies that literally have Wall Street involvement in the core plot, I could count on like two hands. It's not a lot of films.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it. I think I have four honorable mentions in my five choices. So yeah, I had nine that I came up with that I really like. All right. I guess we're on to my number four then. My number four is Margin Call. I love this movie.
He said Trump.
Oh, sorry.
Excuse me. Trump! Sorry about that. I was a little slow.
All right. What's your number four, Andrew?
This will get Trump, but The Big Short.
Yeah.
Trump!
Care to make it a unanimous Trump session at your number four, John?
I have inside job at number four.
Nope, not Trump for me.
Inside job.
Inside job. I was thinking inside man for a second there. I'm like,
no, right. No, well, inside. I almost, I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't, not the movie with, what's his
Denzel.
Name? With Denzel and that British guy whose name escapes me right now. No, Inside Job is a documentary from 2010. And this is, you know, the in-depth look at the 2008 financial crisis, which I think The Big Short also covered, but from a dramatization kind of standpoint. And this, I believe, won the Academy Award for Best Documentary in 2010. It is an exhaustive, like neck break pace experience where it's just laying out like, here's what this, and this. And there must be a thousand, you know, lower thirds throughout the course of this movie. All the different players and all the different corporations and lawyers and billionaires that were involved in, you know, the biggest financial ruin of, you know, my lifetime, certainly. And it's a very illuminating and educational experience, and also extremely frustrating if you're someone like me who tried to buy property during that time period. Like, this is very unfair. I feel like I'm being cheated, and it's not my fault. So, yeah, not a movie to watch if you're in a good mood, because it'll ruin it. But if you're curious, if you're curious about the financial crisis of 2008, which was such a, you know, pivotal moment for many millennials like myself, it is, I think, required viewing to kind of get your handle on a very complicated and very large piece of history. That's just, yeah.
As somebody who moved states in 2009, let me just say I have stories I could tell. I have.
Yeah, yeah. No, I bought my first house right around the same time, and it's like, this is horse crap. Like, this, mm-hmm. This is very unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we can't do anything about it. I'm like,
my main thing from that time was making payments on a house that was so underwater that nobody was ever going to buy it. And then telling them we wanted to work with them, you know, like, hey, listen, this isn't good for us. It isn't good for you or whatever. And they're like, oh, we can't even have a conversation until you stop making your payments. I'm just like, I'm trying to be the good person here. Like, I'm not trying to, you know. So, yeah, it was a bad time. It was a bad time. All right. On that positive note, let's go on to our number threes, shall we?
Like I said, don't watch it if you're in a good mood.
My number three might get trumped. I have Boiler Room at number three.
Good movie.
I'm actually not sure if I've seen this one.
Oh, put it in your watch list. Put it in your watch list.
I have not seen it.
Boiler Room
is
a really good one. And it is, you know, kind of deals with, it's really kind of one of the first movies I remember really dealing with kind of the inside traders and in this kind of way where they were like the Wolf of Wall Street, you know, kind of vibe to them. The cast is
I'm looking at it now. Giovanni Ribisi, Vin Diesel, Nikki Katz, Scott Kahn, Jamie Kennedy, Ben Affleck, just a host, and Will McCormick, just a bunch of names that.
So good script, good cast, and compelling throughout. Very interesting throughout. So yeah, highly recommend Boiler Room.
Do you know the scene in Glengarry Glen Ross when Alec Baldwin gives that giant monologue at the very
always
beginning?
Always be closing.
Yes. What's his name? Ben Affleck has a very, very similar role in Boiler Room where he gives
it's a little bit of an homage to Glengarry, actually. There's
I'm all about that because Alec Baldwin's 5 minutes in that movie is maybe the best 5 minutes in any movie of that whole year.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's so fun. It's so good. And I can't repeat any of it because it's all just swear.
No, you can't.
But it is.
Who
it's
are
such
you?
A
who are you?
So
F you. That's who I am.
This watch costs more than your car, buddy. It's just such a good scene.
Boiler Room is my number three. Andrew, what's your number three?
Wolf of Wall Street.
I had it in my honorable mentions.
Trump.
All right. So we'll wait to talk about that one, which means. John, what's your
number three?
The Big Short. That's where I had it. I think Andrew had it for.
So let's talk about it. Let's talk about our number twos. A movie nobody's mentioned so far at my number two. The Big Short is what I have at my number two. Sure. I can't believe you guys don't like this movie. No, this is amazing stuff. This is where I really, really fell in love with Adam McKay's style. I remember coming out of this and going, he's
a little different.
It's different, and he's doing his own Wikipedia during the movie. And I hadn't really seen that kind of thing before. And so, like, it's kind of his thing, like instant Wikipedia in his own movie. And I really found that compelling and interesting. Not to mention the performances are great. The digging into what happened in such an understandable and authentic way is really fascinating.
It's so amusing to me that there's that great scene in the bathtub with, it's Margot Robbie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That like they do this deliberately overt cutaway to Margot Robbie in a tub, and it's like, well, to get you to focus, here's Margot Robbie in a tub to explain what a short sale is. Mm-hmm. And by God, it worked, because 7 years later, I'm like, yeah, I know what a short sale is, because I was glued to the TV for those 3 minutes.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's just laced with so much, I don't know, like crosstalk and exposition and all this layered history, but it's done with such exuberant, passionate performances from such a great ensemble of guys. It's kind of everything I wanted Dumb Money to be, and it kind of takes the entertainment of Dumb Money with the expositional education of Inside Job and mashes them together for one really fun and edutainable experience.
Edutainable, I like it.
And what's the word I'm trying to find? Education.
Educational.
Edutainment. I don't know what I'm just. It's late. Edutainment? That's a word, right?
Sure, it is now.
It is now.
Yeah. All right, so there is my number two. Andrew, what is your number two?
This is where I have Margin Call.
Mm, cool. Chat about it.
It's one of my favorite movies. It's in my top 100 movies of all time. Ooh. It's just layered with everybody giving their best performances.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Irons gives an Oscar-worthy performance in this movie. I am beyond flabbergasted that he wasn't even nominated that year.
I think Tucci steals the show, in my opinion. I think Tucci is amazing in this movie.
Tucci's not even in it that much.
But when he is, man, he's just...
But when he is in it?
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. I really like him.
No, it's such a good movie. You have to pay attention when you're watching this movie because they... Unlike...
Yeah, this movie doesn't spoon-feed you at all.
Yeah, it's not a movie that's interested in helping you understand. It's like... Facts, 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 facts. And I think this is highly based on the true story without, you know, naming the actual companies involved in the 2008 tranche shortage, like collapse of the stock market. Yeah, I cannot recommend this movie enough. I
saw it once over 10 years ago, and I don't remember much about it, so I need to rewatch it clearly. That is a big vote of confidence from you there.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's in my top 100 movies of all time. So,
yep. John, what you got in your number two?
All right, I'm going to just say up front, I have two movies left, and I am getting worried that we haven't talked about either one of them yet. The first is The Wolf of Wall Street.
Andrew mentioned it. It got Trump. You trumped it.
Okay, I did. All right, well, that makes sense. Good. I forgot. Well, Andrew, let's talk about it. What do you like about The Wolf of Wall Street?
Well, you had it higher than I did. I'll just fill in the gap.
It's on you to start, John.
It's, I don't know. It's Scorsese at his best. He's just going manic. He's just throwing everything at the wall. Jonah Hill does such good work in this. DiCaprio is, you know, obviously he's fantastic. This is the breakout role for Margot. And it's just like a frantic, fun ride that leans into that, I don't know, like circus mania of like stockbrokers and that like, the very fast paced. It doesn't matter who we crush on the way up. Let's just get there. Mm-hmm. These are not like good people, but it's a good movie because it's just very fun and eclectic and raunchy and vulgar and exciting and sexy and just there's so much about it that is really really fun. Like most of Scorsese's films, right? They all have that kind of quality to them a bit, but this one I think at the most. Aaron? You didn't have it on your list at all.
No.
I don't think Aaron likes this movie.
I don't like this movie very much. Yeah. I do have it in my honorable mentions just because I think it deserves mentioning. But
yeah.
I mean, Goodfellas and Wolf of Wall Street are in the same boat for me. I get why people love them. I totally understand. Yeah. I just can't invest because the whole time I'm going, these are terrible people. Why do you want me to have so much fun with this? Like, why are you trying to make this so exciting? It's, you know, I get, you know, in my own head or whatever. It's hard for me to enjoy.
Because for 2 hours you get to vicariously live through.
But why do you want to?
No inhibitions.
But why do you want to?
Sometimes I don't want to.
Because it's going to be exhilarating.
I think that's terrible. I don't know. Anyways, but yeah, I always mention it in the same breath with Goodfellas. I have the same reaction to both.
Yeah,
of
no, exactly,
them,
so. Exactly.
It's funny you say that because I've heard a lot of people say, "Oh, Wolf of Wall Street, this is Martin Scorsese. He's stretching his abilities. He's not making a gangster movie." And I say, bullcrap. This like is a gangster movie.
This is
100% a gangster movie.
This is The Departed all over again. It's just a different setting and a different setup. They're wearing ties instead of guns. It's no different.
Yeah.
This is a gangster movie. You cannot convince me otherwise.
But I don't want to be – I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the scene where DiCaprio like goes absolutely like, I don't know, unconscious on Quaaludes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that scene where he's like crawling through his mansion trying to get to the car in the drive.
Yep.
I saw that opening weekend. The theater was – the noise was – just cacophonous coming out of that theater. It was one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in any movie. And it's not, I guess it's kind of a comedy. There's certainly so much in it that's funny.
Oh, it's
but
a comedy.
I guess I didn't expect that. And the audience was just on the floor laughing. Like, it was
such
a fun scene.
I totally get it. I really do. I really do get it. All right. So I think, Andrew, wait, did we already get to number two? We're number ones. It's time for our number ones.
Yeah.
My number one is the Hudsucker Proxy.
I knew it.
What? Oh, I'm so surprised by that. I'm so surprised by that.
I think you're being sarcastic, John.
No, I'm not. I've actually not heard you talk about this movie, and I was expecting something else here. So tell me what.
No, this is one of my favorite movies. This is my top 20 of all time.
I didn't know that. I don't think I've ever heard you talk about it on the show.
For me, this is top three Coen brothers. I think this movie is spectacular. I think it's entertaining. I think it's compelling. I think it has something deep and meaningful to say. I think it's well-constructed. I think it's scripted incredibly. I think the performances are absolutely astonishing all the way down the road. Some of Paul Newman's most interesting work. This is one of the most quotable movies in my life. I find myself going back to some of these quotes over and over again. This is a lot of fun. Hudsucker Proxy.
Well, you're Norville, Aaron. That's who you are.
That could be possibly it. I mean, I do kind of, have a bit of a companionship with the idea of Norville Barnes and kind of the wide-eyed, innocent, naive guy.
Another movie that I have not seen in 14, 15 years, and I remember it's for kids and nothing else. I need to go back to
kids.
It.
Sorry, it's for kids.
For kids. Yeah. I need to go back to this. I remember liking it a lot, but I certainly would not have pegged it as a top 20.
A piece of paper with the circle drawn on it, and he goes, for kids. And the look on Paul Newman's face is just like, yep, you're the guy we want in charge of our company to completely destroy it. I love this movie. I have such a place for this movie in my heart. So
I definitely got to go back to it. That's a good rewatch.
Yeah. So that's my number one. Andrew, what is your number one?
My number one's American Psycho.
Yeah, I wondered if you might have that up at number one. I mentioned it in my honorable mentions. So, yeah.
This has been such an illuminating best ever challenge for me. I am so
well,
surprised.
I know what you have at number one. And I'm excited to talk about it. It's in my honorable mentions, but we'll get there.
This is such an interesting list, and I like them all. They're all great, but I'm just like, I didn't even think of some of these.
American Psycho, this is a movie you can watch 100 times if you want to, which I don't think
I was going to say. It's not going to be 100 times. Quite the movie
you
I want
might,
to
you
watch
might be an American
times.
Psycho if you watch American Psycho that many times.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying it's a movie where every single time you watch it, you can pick up something different. Or there's the theme or the messaging behind it is so obscured and difficult to understand that sometimes it's just, you find yourself watching a different movie every single time.
I feel about American Psycho very similar to how I feel about Showgirls. And I'll tell you what I mean by that here in a second.
I just did the dog head cock. You got to explain this for
Listen,
me.
I'm the king of the tees. I'm the king of the tees.
All right.
I just imagine Christian Bale up on the stage.
I'm really, really glad I came to both of them later in life, and didn't watch them when I was younger.
He did just say he came to them later.
Yes. Yes, I did. I'm really glad that it was. It was later in life that I experienced both of these movies. And I will tell you why. Because satire is often wasted on the young. And like, I think there's something about, you know, growing up, maturing, whatever. Andrew's in the process of maturing right now and moving on.
No, I'm not.
there's something about the process of, you know, growing up that allows you to see satire in a much more interesting way. And American Psycho is a movie I would have completely dismissed in my 20s, completely dismissed it. And watching it later in life allowed me to watch it and go, I think I see what's going on here. And the people who watch American Psycho and find like admiration for that character are completely missing the satire.
Oh yeah, it's concerning, genuinely.
Yeah, and this is again, I think there's, for me again, this is the kind of movie I go to when people are like, you know, can't you praise a movie that has a bad person as the main character, like we're just talking about Wolf of Wall Street or whatever.
Right.
Yes, you can, but like Wolf of Wall Street doesn't feel like satire to me. It feels like,
no, it's glorifying.
It feels like
Scarface.
Joyousness, right? Like where you can completely see what's going on in this movie with what he's doing. I specifically chose Showgirls for that reaction, by the way. I could have easily have gone with Starship Troopers. That would have been just as easy if I wanted to go with a different movie. But
you led it up with it came to.
I know. Listen. I understand what happened.
Come on, I just for the record, I want to be known that I did not pick up on the double entendre. But when Andrew started laughing, I realized what happened, and then I became immature.
You know,
it took me a second. I was a little slower.
All right. So on that note, anything else about American Psycho before we get to John's number one?
Oh my god, I totally forgot. That's why we were here. No, I'm good. Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome. John, tell us your number one and why it is your number one.
I am aghast that we have not mentioned Oliver Stone's 1987 masterpiece, Wall Street.
Correct.
Until now. This is not just the...
I haven't seen it.
This is, the far and away easy by a country mile winner in this category for me. This is probably one of my top 50 movies of all time. I adore this script. I love the characterizations of this like little sheep that gets, you know, thrust up through the ranks by this hungry wolf, the Gordon Gekko character, played in an Academy Award winning performance from Michael Douglas. I've watched this movie 5 or 6 times in the last 10 years, which, if you know me, is a lot. I don't rewatch movies more than once or twice. It is just such an exciting, fast-paced script with compelling, interesting characters. Charlie gets to play opposite his dad, which is so great to see both of them, Martin Sheen and Charlie Sheen, doing some really interesting work together. And yeah, the Gordon Gekko character, the greed is good speech, that entire... it's just so interesting. And what I love about this fictional story, not to spoil a lot, but the bad people get comeuppance at the end. It's not just, they went away and they all stay billionaires. And that's just such a frustrating way that real life ends. So this fictional world portrays perhaps the only time in history that a stockbroker has actually received consequence for doing bad things. And I like living in that fictionalized world where materialism... Yeah. Has, you know, there is punishment when you abuse it.
I need to watch it again. I like it. It was my first honorable mention, for sure. But it didn't move me in the way that the other five did. So, yeah, I need to go back and watch Wall Street for sure.
And Andrew, you said you had not seen it. Huge recommend. One of my all-time faves for sure.
Yeah. Let's get
not
into honorable mentions.
The first person that said that I really need to see it.
Let's get into honorable mentions. Andrew, why don't you kick us off with what the gurus said over at the contributors over at SifPop said.
There was a tie for third place this week. Tie between Hudsucker Proxy and Die Hard with Vengeance.
Oh, Die Hard with a Vengeance. Okay,
I guess that counts.
Yeah.
The bad guys manipulate the stocks.
I think that's right.
Timothy Oliphant.
Number two was The Big Short.
Mm.
Okay.
And number one choice for the gurus was Wolf of Wall Street.
There you go.
Respectable choices.
I only had one other honorable mention, which was Money Monster, which is a George Clooney movie that kind of flew way under the radar that was, I thought, pretty good. So I wanted to mention Money Monster.
Is that the one where they're taken hostage?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. That was interesting.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Yeah. I have a couple. One that is not really about the stock market, but about the assault on Wall Street with Dominic Purcell from Prison Break. It's not an excellent movie, but it's a really good actioner. It's a good single location, one guy against his perceived enemies, literally shooting up downtown Manhattan. Really tight, fun little action script. And then two movies that are really, really close.
What's it called?
Assault on Wall Street. I'm sorry. I kind of
I thought that was
no, I kind of talked descriptor. Through the title. No. The Assault on Wall Street. I think it's a remake of a 70s film, actually, but the 2007 version, whatever, is the one I'm referring to.
Okay.
And then two movies that are adjacent to stocks but don't involve it would be The Secret of My Success with Michael J. Fox, which is such a perfect encapsulation of 80s hustle culture. And going after that, getting the raise, mm-hmm. and getting the bigger
sure.
truck.
Yeah.
And Michael J. Fox is always good. And then the other one, another movie I adore and have rewatched 3 or 4, 5 times just in the last couple of years, Working Girl with Melanie Griffith. And that's all about skyscrapers and getting the raise and, making sure your boss appreciates your hard work so you can get the next big deal. And Melanie Griffith, Harrison Ford, such a fun script. And Alec Baldwin's in that one too as a jerk.
Nice. all right, there you go. Our thoughts on the best ever stock movies. Let's do some buried treasure, guys, to finish this off. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? John, you're our guest, so you will go last. I'll go first. I mentioned this in the pre-show because I talked about kind of the last 10 movies I've seen and got a reaction from both John and Andrew, but I'm going to recommend Grave of the Fireflies, and I'm going to do it carefully. It was the first time I had ever seen this. I was not ready for how intentionally this movie wants to be authentic about its story. It doesn't, I have to be honest, I really like how it structures that story in a way to allow you to experience it without, it actually protects you a little bit. Let's just say that. The structure of the story protects you a little bit. I think it's beautiful. I was weeping, through a couple parts. But there was there's a famous quote that's impossible to make a war movie that doesn't glorify war. And I think this movie proves that quote wrong. I think this is a war movie that is clearly a movie that doesn't glorify war. Grave of the Fireflies is my buried treasure. Just go into it knowing it's heavy. And I think if you do that, you'll be fine. I know a lot of times those movies can feel like homework. Try not to approach it like that. I find myself doing that sometimes where it's like, oh no, I know I'm going to have to feel things or whatever. Every time I feel that, I come out the other and glad that I watched it. So
it's a very meaningful and important heartbreak.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word. It's a devastating experience, but it's very worthwhile.
Yeah.
I was absolutely floored when I saw this a few years ago.
Yep.
Or six now. This was right before.
Was this your first time watching it?
My first time watching it. Yep. So there you go. Grave of the Fireflies. Andrew, what is your buried treasure?
Well, I don't know how I'm going to follow that one up, but I'll try. On Amazon Prime Video, Gen V came out.
It's a great double feature with Grave of the Fireflies.
Yeah, exactly. So if I would have known. Gen V is a, what are they called? Not knockoff shows, but a
spin-off.
Show, a spinoff of The Boys. This is kind of mixing My Hero Academia with The Boys. It's all about a university for superhero kids.
I mean, it's kind of, X-Men, right? That's kind of the vibe is, a school for superheroes.
Yeah. But this is X-Men if it was...
This is triple X-Men, basically.
This is triple X-Men, yeah. If you were to mix X-Men with Euphoria and a super bloody 80s action movie, then you get Gen V. But no, I think that their characters are interesting. The plot has me curious as to where it's going to go. It has me intrigued right now. So, yeah, Gen V.
There you go. Gen V from the world of The Boys. John, what is your buried treasure?
Going back 41 years for this old TV show that only ran for 6 episodes, The Police Squad. This was the precursor to the Naked Gun trilogy, which I think a lot of people don't know that the subtitle, Naked Gun Files from the Police Squad, is in reference to this TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It aired on ABC for just a couple of months in 1982. They're quick 24-minute episodes, but they are so god dang funny. This is a fabulous show that's a little, I think, less ostentatious, for lack of a better word, than the movies. The movies kind of go a little over the top. The movies go to 11. These are like a 7, right? It's a little more subdued, a little more subtle, but there's some great sight gags. There's some great one-liners. And they do so many fun things that we see again or paid off in different ways or recontextualized in the movies. So if you like the Naked Gun movies, I think the Police Squad miniseries, or show, I guess, which is canceled, right? It's not a miniseries, just canceled, is such really good TV from a very, very long time ago. One of my favorite quotes is when Leslie Nielsen walks into this guy's office and he says, "Hey, who are you? How'd you get in here?" "I'm the locksmith." "And I'm the locksmith." And the whole show is just great wordplay. And I just, if you like that kind of humor, this show is a really quick 3 hours of your time.
I do like that kind of humor, and I love this show.
So you've seen it too. That's great. Because a lot of people don't even know it exists.
Within the last week, I played all of six of the epilogues for my sons.
The freeze frame where they do the freeze frame epilogues. They're so good. They're so fun.
And I won't spoil them here in case you want to experience them. You can find a compilation on YouTube or wherever, or just go watch the show. Where do you watch the show? I can't find anywhere that it's streaming at all. So
I forget. I had a copy from a friend from a long time ago.
Yeah, maybe something you'll have to seek out through completely legal means.
I actually don't know where you would get it today. I've just had them for a long time.
But yes, it is well worth seeking out. But yeah, we just laughed and laughed and laughed at those epilogues. So I had forgotten. I remembered the freeze frame gag, but I had forgotten that they also did this gag where they just kept mentioning all the people they had locked up. Every epilogue, they would add another person that they locked up. So like by the end, it's like, "Yeah, go spend time with such and such." Yeah, such and such over there. Yeah, we put such and such away. And it cracks me up. Like there's
one of my other favorite recurring gags. My other favorite recurring gag, and it's a great spoof on cop movies, is Frank Drebin, the protagonist. He'll go to a shoe shiner outside the police station. He's like, What can you tell me about the guys downtown running drugs?" And he's like, "You didn't hear it from me." And he'll lean in and give the cop some exposition. And then Frank gets his info and he moves about. All right. So the shoeshine guy is clued into the word on the street. He has that inside info. But the great part of the joke is someone else comes up next and he's in full scrubs. And he's like, "All right, I need to perform an ecumenectomy in the OR in 20 minutes. But I don't know if we can, you know, use, what do I need to use anesthesia for this?" And like, and then the shoeshine guy has intimate medical knowledge about this one particular procedure. And it's just so funny that they're bribing the shoeshiner for medical knowledge or inside stuff about it. And the idea that he just knows everything was, and the way they do it, of course, is much better than me retelling it. So check it out. Great show.
Good stuff. That is the Police Squad. You may have to find it through completely legal means. Gen V is on Prime, and Grave of the Fireflies is available to purchase at various places. Well, we did it, guys. We managed to do a podcast. Congratulations. Wall Street will never look down on dumb podcasts again. We managed to pull it off.
We did it.
Goliath has fallen. Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And thank you to Jonathan Paula for hanging out with us again today. Jonathan, tell the fine people where to look you up.
Threads? I don't know. No. There's so many social networks. The one that just got acquired by Tiny for $50 million is not a bad place to check me out. Letterboxd. That's where I'm doing all my reviews. I'm rewatching the whole Scream franchise this week. I might start reviewing them as well. I've only seen the first two, so this should be a fun week for me.
Oh, this will be a fun week for you.
Yeah. I stopped watching them 25 years ago, but I really liked those first two, and it's been... At least those first two, it's been fun rewatching and getting back into the that genre of like self-aware horror. Yeah, Letterboxd. I'm doing Hooptober again this year, where you watch 31 horror movies during the month of October, and that are like totally outside my comfort zone, stuff I've never heard of, stuff I haven't, you know, even thought about before. And it's always creates a really fun couple of weeks where I'm just watching movies like Chud from 1980, whatever, 84, which is like, what's Chud? Never heard of Chud. Well, you should hear of Chud because it was fun. Bordello of Blood, another movie I checked out the other day. Dead and Buried. These are all fantastic. Go watch them.
I hope that the acquisition of Letterboxd results in some advancement in some social features that I think have been needed for a while there to really kind of see the next level of interaction commentary.
I'm optimistic the site will be okay, but anytime venture capitalist money comes in and buys a tiny little site like this, it definitely worries me that it might get a lot worse.
Yeah.
And I hope it doesn't, because I love it. It's my favorite social site.
Yep. Thank you as well to our SifPop members for giving monthly to make SifPop a real thing. We already mentioned it, but you can go to Patreon to check it out. $3 a month is where it starts. It's patreon.com/SifPop. There are many ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review wherever you listen, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever. You can also email us feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too. So make sure you let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than being stealth about your military targets when you have to paint a giant glowing target on them a football field wide. We will be back next week.
Doesn't make any sense.
We'll be back next week with much more, and we will see you then. Bye.
See you later.
Bye.
Arrivederci.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.